Welcome to Blast to the Past, a talk show where we revisit the media that shaped our culture. How you doing, Tab?
I'm doing really well, Landry. How are you?
I'm good, man. It's good to see you, brother.
Yeah, good seeing you too.
Well, today we're going to talk about an old-time classic. This is a little different, I think, for our show so far. We're going like way back into the past, 61, Breakfast at Tiffany's. When I think about like a movie that's just known for like its fashion and kind of like a fashion icon and Audrey Hepburn, this is what I think about. Did you have any previous relationship with this coming into it?
No. I've never seen this movie. The only thing I knew about Breakfast at Tiffany's is that no man has ever recommended it, and really no women over the age of like 22. The Deep Blue Something song from 1996. Outside of that, I had little to no knowledge. And the only thing I'd really known about the movie itself was that Audrey Hepburn was in it, and she had this kind of iconic role that a lot of people reference. They don't really give a lot of details on it. They'll just say stuff like, oh, Holly Go Lightly, and then they'll kind of just move on to the next topic. And
yeah,
I think I know why.
Well, we're going to talk about a lot about this movie because it certainly has some really interesting talking points. But I think the most iconic thing that I think about in this movie, there's that poster of her like in a jewelry store that you saw in like a ton of like college girls that you just met dorm rooms. But there's also, I mean, it's kind of like almost as synonymous as like a Salvador Dali painting in like a pothead's dorm room or something, you know, you just saw that everywhere. But, you know, I think of like Audrey Hepburn in like a black dress with the long cigarette holder. I'm just like super classy is kind of what I thought about coming into this film. And the IMDb synopsis is even a young New York socialite becomes interested in a young man who has moved into her apartment building, but her past threatens to get in the way. And so it leaves you, like, if you're going into this movie, you're probably thinking, like, oh, I'm in for, like, a romantic comedy, and maybe she has some, like, darkness in her past, but it's a 1960s Hollywood film. They didn't even have the rating systems back then, so what could we possibly be getting into? And we'll definitely talk about that. But it stars Audrey Hepburn, and really, there's no one else to even mention, because she steals the entire show. I mean, if there's one thing that I came away with from this movie is that, like, man, she can really hold a screen down. Like, she steals every scene that she's in my opinion.
Yeah, very charismatic, you know, quite the looker. I can see why people were really drawn to this. And on your point, yeah, half the girls in college have the Audrey Hepburn poster on their wall, and half the men have the Blutarsky College.
Yeah.
Like that's it. Like,
right.
You go to college, and that's, at least when I was in school in the early 2000s, I've seen that poster 1,000 times. I've never seen this movie, and I knew nothing about it. You know, you and I had spoken a few weeks ago about Audrey Hepburn, and I kept confusing Katharine Hepburn and Audrey Hepburn. So I really didn't have a whole lot to work off. And when I saw this, it was like, I could see why it has like a lot of popularity. You know, especially in 1961, I was not alive in 1961, but I can imagine that if a movie like this comes out where you have a very interesting female lead, it would really appeal to a lot of people. And it's kind of what I expected, and also not what I expected.
Right.
With this one, like it was an interesting movie. I'll say that it was an interesting movie. I thought there were some things about it that were really fun and cool. And I thought some things about it were just kind of like, all right, you know, but I really enjoyed it. Overall, I enjoyed it. This is definitely a unique one. And this is the first one from the 1960s we've done. I mean, most of our stuff's been 80s and 90s, right?
True. And I will say this, like, I was not bored at any moment during this 2-hour runtime. It's interesting. I think visually, there's just a balance of color. There's definitely, like, I could see people just geeking out over the costume choices and stuff. It feels almost like a time capsule of like an upper echelon, like upper social class New York City in the 1960s, which is very cool to look back on. And I think that's probably why it's kind of held its, you know, its popularity in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
What was cool looking into it, I had never known who Blake Edwards was. This is who directed it. But really the only thing that I can tell that he created was he created like the characters and everything for Pink Panther and directed all those TV shows, movies, which I don't know if you have any affiliation with that. I don't personally. I mean, obviously I know what it is from its commercial kind of success, but I don't have any history with Pink Panther whatsoever. I've never seen a single thing from it, but I thought that his comedy chops were present here. There's a couple of scenes that were very funny, in my opinion, especially the party scenes. There were some interesting kind of like drunk characters and stuff. And Audrey Hepburn is funny in her own way as well. But yeah, this is a romantic comedy, and I don't know that I expected it to be a romantic comedy as much as I just thought it was like a pure like romance drama movie. I got to be 100% honest, I was not excited coming into this at all. It took me by surprise in that it was not boring in any way. But now I think that we've gotten our synopsis out of the way. It's time for everyone's favorite segment, Abs Notes.
All right. So I actually took solid 3 pages of notes. I could have gone to a fourth.
That means in our past history, that typically means that a movie has not captivated Tab's attention.
Well, I'll say in a way that captivated it too much because I was constantly like writing stuff down. Like I find right. The movies where I'm not really entertained. I don't really have a lot of notes on those just because there's like you kind of zone out, you know, but this one really held my attention right from the start. This movie opens on a really dope ass looking taxi. Okay. And I know you had mentioned the colors, and the colors to me are the star of this movie. I don't know if it's some kind of filter or what's going on, but everything just pops. I mean, there's so many great colors. Yeah. There's the taxi cab. There's the sleep mask she's wearing. There's George Peppard's eyes. Jesus, like this guy's eyes are just like, I was watching like, oh my Lord. It kind of reminded me of The Wiz and Seinfeld. I don't know if you know that reference, but when he kind of first looks at Elaine and she's just like, dude, they got eyes on this guy. And when I first saw George Peppard, and I'll be honest, I'm not familiar with George Peppard's, you know, IMDb page. Couldn't tell you who the guy was.
This is the kind of like sleazy guy that's in the...
This is the love interest.
Okay.
Paul Vartnik or, you know.
Okay, got you.
Yeah. Cool. So this is the main guy that she's kind of having the back and forth with the whole movie. So it opens on an empty street in New York. Dope-ass taxi pulls up. Very cool shot. I really thought the opening
was
very
great.
Cool. She gets out of the car. What was that?
I was going to say, from the very beginning, this movie felt very French New Wave to me. I don't know if that means anything to you or if you've ever seen like any Jean-Luc Godard films or, you know, anything like that. But it had a very stylish direction to it.
Is Amelie one of those movies? I've not seen that.
Well, Amelie is, yes, it is a French like indie film from the late 90s or early 2000s. And it definitely kind of, I think, you know, pays homage to its predecessors. The French New Wave, I think, is typically, you know, earlier, like 50s, 60s, that type of stuff.
So she crawls out of this taxi, and then you get the title of the movie, Breakfast at Tiffany's, okay? Because here she is eating a croissant outside of a Tiffany's, just staring at it. Before they open, it's probably, there's zero cars on the streets. So I can only assume this is early morning on maybe like a weekend. Yeah, and she's eating a croissant, you know, staring at some necklaces through a window. And that's kind of the shot that's on the poster, you know, the big iconic shot. They get that right out of the way. They're like, hey, you know, because I came into this movie thinking, okay, I know I'm like at least going to get one iconic shot. Well, they get it out of the way in about 40 seconds. Here she is chowing on a croissant and some coffee, you know. And then you get this really strange, like, title sequence, like, credits, which looked like closing credits.
Right.
But right up front, you know, that was kind of weird. And you know, that's a common thing you see in a lot of movies around this time. Like, I watched a lot of Westerns, and you see a lot of the old Westerns, and they were kind of like that, where opening scene kind of looks like what the 1980s used for their closing credits, you know.
Yeah, I don't know when the shift was to put the credits at the end of a film, but it had to have been like mid-60s or early 70s, because anything you watch in the 60s and before that, the credits are up front. Even the old Disney movies, you know, like they open the fairy tale book and then it's got the credits and then like some really lame song and then they finally dive into the story.
So the credits are going and you see in big bold letters, Mickey Rooney as Mr. Yunioshi. And we'll talk about this guy.
God, dude.
We're going to talk about this guy.
Unbelievable. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
I had known that Mickey Rooney did some kind of, you know, ethnic role at some point in his career that by today's standards upsets people. But I did not know what movie it was.
Well, now here it is.
Here it is. You know, right from the beginning. All of its glory.
Unbelievable.
Then you get that iconic shot of Audrey Hepburn, and then you kind of cut from that straight view credits to Mickey Rooney as Mr. Yuniashi, sound asleep, wakes up, hits his head on like a
lamp that's like a 3 feet ahead of his,
like a lamp, like a Chinese lantern. I've only seen him, and I assume he's Japanese. I would guess, allegedly. Right. And so he hits his head, and can we talk about the teeth?
The teeth are unreal. I mean, I guess this is a stereotype. I'm not sure if this was a stereotype back then, but the buck teeth were like definitely, I mean, this entire man is a caricature of like, you know, an Asian man back then. It's honestly, it's uncomfortable to watch. It's uncomfortable to watch. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Yeah. I was like, man, like sometimes you go back and you hear about people like, oh, they were so racist back then, but you like really have to look for it. You have to read between the lines. This is right up front and center, man.
This is Al Jolson. That's what this is. This is Al Jolson.
Explain what that is. I don't know that.
Oh, Al Jolson, he was one of the actors that did blackface. So, like, that was his whole thing. Like, okay. Al Jolson was, like, the go-to blackface guy.
Okay, yeah, well, that's exactly what this is.
Yeah, I guess they're like, hey, Al, you know, times have changed, you're out. But Mickey Rooney, as Mr. Yuniashi, you're in, and he comes right from the stock. He comes in hot, okay? He does not hold back. Like, I don't know if somebody got to Mickey Rooney and was like, hey, Mickey, we're going to play this role a little subtle. And he was like, no, we're not.
I mean, he's supposed to be the comedic relief, I think, for a lot of it. And, I mean, he comes in very hot
from
the beginning.
Right from the start, refers to her as Mrs. Go Right Ree. And just, and those teeth, the teeth. And right from the start, I kind of got, because, again, I didn't know anything about this movie. And I got a feeling early on that Audrey Hepburn was a bit of a gold digger. Like, there was just something about her that just didn't sit right.
She's 100. Yeah, she's all about it.
Yeah, and then the great colors in the movie. I had that written down. And then the George Frappard, which I don't know what's going on with the front door in this apartment complex where everyone needs to like
also unhinged behavior right from the beginning. Yeah. I thought this guy probably had like some questionable morals. He rings the doorbell like 76 times.
Yeah, and it rings throughout the entire building.
Yeah, what a selfish move. Yeah. You're not gonna wait for a few seconds to see if anybody's responding. You know, it takes a little time.
Yeah, no, it's a big building. It's like 3-4 stories. You know, Mr. Yuniashi has to come all the way from the top floor, walk down there to let you in. Like, and so somehow George Frappard gets into Audrey Hepburn's apartment. She's very welcoming. His doors open, come on in, stranger, a guy who's literally moving into the building like today. So now he's in her apartment, and she seems a bit chaotic at this point. Okay, let's just like she's got her telephone is in a suitcase. She's got ballerina shoes in the refrigerator, and she is a hot mess. Yes. Right from the start, like Audrey Hepburn's character, Holly Golightly, is a hot mess. Okay. And then I started thinking, is George or is Paul, we'll call him Paul from now on.
Well, really, he's known as Fred throughout most of the film.
For most of the movie, he's Fred. Like, this very confusing movie with names.
Yes.
I started to get the sense that maybe he's a gigolo.
He is.
Yeah. So he's a gigolo, right? He's a gigolo author?
Male. We'll call him a male escort. It seems like he's a... And there's allusions to the fact that he's actually a part of like a group of men. So that would definitely make him a gigolo.
Okay, didn't pick up on that part.
There's one part where the lady that he's with that pays him is like, well, we'll just, she alludes to the group that she got him from, essentially.
Okay. And she left $300, 1961, on his bedside nightstand. Would you like to take a guess how much money that's worth today?
I'm going to guess that it is $36,000.
$36,000?
I'm way off.
$3,187.33 by today's standards.
300. Oh, sorry. Yep, you're right. For some reason, I was thinking 3,000 that she left them there. I basically have like a times 10 multiplier going on in my head.
Yeah. No, you nailed it if you thought it was times 10, because that would have been very close. And also, this movie, 1961, different time. It's nice to see cigarettes being like, now you don't want to see much cigarettes on TV, you know?
Completely agree. There's almost like a romanticism to cigarettes now because, you know, like there's like no one smokes cigarettes anymore.
No, nobody does. Like you go, like I remember even 5 years ago, you can go outside and people were smoking. Now it's all vapes and stuff like this. I mean, it's just like... Cigarettes are out. The Zen is in, you know, vaping is in. Like, oh, you're lighting up a cigarette? Get the hell out of here, you know? And I will say cigarettes are the worst. They smell the worst. They affect people around you, but This movie, it's a lot of close quarters and a lot of heavy smoking. I wrote down Audrey Hepburn, clearly a master manipulator. And she's just dropping clues right from the start.
But, like, she doesn't really hide it on her sleeve. And I think that that's part of, like, there's not many people that could do what she does, where she basically is like, I'm going to do this, and you don't care because I'm, like, I'm that attractive, and I've got that much style, and I've got that much pull. And, I mean, even from the very beginning, one of the things that struck me, because I, having seen a lot of 1960s films, this film's pretty risque right from the start. She's wearing just a men's t-shirt as, like, a nightgown, kind of. And she answers the door to the stranger, and then she invites him into her apartment, and then she invites him into her bedroom, and they're having their first conversation on the bedroom, and I'm like, whoa, this is, like, this is breaking some real boundaries. This is before there's any rating system for any film. Right off the bat, I was literally like kind of like shocked. I was like, wow, I can't believe that this was allowed. Because there's a, like a law, a literal law at this point in time where two people cannot be in the same bed. And this may have gone away like right before this, but like up until all through the 50s, they couldn't film two people in the same bed. I think there is actually a scene in this one. So it must have been, you know, pretty fresh, but still.
Yeah. She does crawl into his bed.
That's right.
She has no problem breaking through windows. By the way, security in this building is non-existent. All you have to do is ring the buzzer long enough, Mr. Yuniyoshi will let you in. Or you can just use the fire escape and unlock every window in town. Like, no one is locking any windows. And then the woman that left the $300 for Paul, was she his interior designer, right?
Yeah.
Like, she, like, decorated?
It's her apartment. So she bought the apartment. She furnishes the apartment, she decorates the apartment, and she pays him money on the side.
Okay. That is the single ugliest home phone in the history of home phones that is in there. And look, go back and see. Don't waste your time. Go back to watch.
Gold plated.
Gaudy. Like, this thing is gaudy. It's like gold.
It's impossible not to notice.
Dazzled. It is. It's a thing. It made the notes.
There's a couple of still frames on it where they hold, I think twice, they hold the shot on it for like a couple seconds.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to miss.
Yeah. It's disgusting. And then there's like this party scene, right? Because, like, you know, a lot of women are there, a lot of men are there. There's a lot of drinking. And Audrey Hepburn shows up with the most obnoxiously long cigarette holder. This thing is 24 inches long. Like, it is causing all kinds of chaos. Sets some lady's hair on fire. Thankfully, it's so chaotic in there, someone spills a beer or a whiskey drink or something on her to put the flame out before anyone notices. She almost burns the cat. And let's forget about the cat. The cat might be the third star in this movie. Like, yeah, just simply called Cat.
Cat is definitely the third star in this movie.
Did you notice the opening credits they mentioned they show Cat? Like, Cat shows up in the opening credit.
Really? I didn't see that.
I couldn't tell if it was the actual cat or if it was the cat's handler. But somebody makes an appearance in the opening credits and just, like, parentheses, Cat. I was like, oh.
Even the cat, though, like, maybe we can get into the psychology of Hepburn's character. But it's a clue to the fact that she is just, like, a complete mess of a person.
Yeah. So this party gets a little wild, okay? Maybe you seem to know more details than I do whenever we watch these things. There was multiple women staring into a mirror and just sobbing.
Yes. Well, I noticed the one that was like, first of all, like, I love this because for shame, I think this has actually been me where, like, you get really messed up in your early 20s and you're looking in a mirror and you just, like, crack yourself up. Like, I've definitely done that before. I've never, like, sobbed into a mirror before, but I loved that they cut away and then they come back to her and she's sobbing. And I just thought that was hilarious. I thought that was a really funny cut.
Yeah. So zero room to maneuver in this apartment. There's literally, it's like a one bedroom apartment.
Okay. These are like 200. Upper, there's billionaires in this room. What are they doing in this single bedroom apartment of this no-name woman who is definitely like a promiscuous human, probably an escort or a call girl or whatever? Why are they there? It doesn't make any sense.
It sounds like the ninth richest man in either the world or New York.
Under
is there.
50. Under 50, right? Yeah.
I didn't catch that part. Was the president of Brazil, was he there at this time?
Yeah, the heir to the president of Brazil.
She's really pulling some bigwigs into this one bedroom apartment with.
It's incredible.
And then this one was like, so this one right here is what really, I liked this scene and also did not like this scene. So at the party, there's a lady who's hammered, just thrashed. And she's like, all right, I'm going to have one more drink and then I'm going to do this thing. And she takes a drink and then she just has this look on her face like the lights are out. Okay. So she's out on her feet. So she's standing straight up at this party and just lights are out. And then she starts to, like, fall forward. And Audrey Hepburn just goes, Timber! And this poor woman falls from standing up straight onto her face. No one tries to help her.
And not only that, but they have to clear out a path, right? Because, I mean, we're all, like, standing ass to elbows in this room.
They're like sardines in this place. And then she starts to fall, and everyone's like, like back and give her room to fall face first into the ground. And this poor lady, you know, I guarantee you, broken nose, bruised lip, fractured eye socket, like just out like a light. And Audrey Hepburn does nothing. The next thing that somebody does, the literal next thing that happened is someone steps over her. Like she's just a corpse. They're like, all right, back to the party. And they just like step right over this poor girl. And she's just out, absolutely out. And to me, I was kind of on the fence whether or not this is a likable character, Audrey Hepburn. I think she's likable, or Holly Golightly, because she's so unique and like quirky and fun. But there's like I was picking up like crumbs of the dark side to this lady.
Dude, I completely agree. I don't think she's very likable at all. I think she's extremely attractive, and I think that she has like a very unique way of. She's cute. She has like this really charming personality. But she's evil, almost. Like, evil strong, but, like, she has zero moral compass, and she's willing to exploit anyone and everyone because of her past, obviously. She's gone through some stuff. But, yeah, there's not a lot of redeeming parts to her character. In fact, I would say there's almost none. And, yeah, you could say that she has some psychological trauma going on, but, like, this is a story about two people with zero moral compass who wind up falling in love. And I don't think there's a lot. Like, I'm actually shocked that it's held up over time.
So, are you familiar with the save the cat moment?
No.
So, there's a kind of a thing in screenwriting where they'll do what's called save the cat moment.
This is a book, right? I've seen the book.
Which book?
It's called Save the Cat. There's a very famous screenwriting book.
Oh, okay. So, maybe this is what it's about. I've not read that or even heard of it. But you'll write a scene early in the movie to kind of show the audience that this person is a good person. Even if the character's not, like kind of Tony Soprano, right? He's not a lovable guy. No one goes into this thinking Tony Soprano is this, you know, person that you should be rooting for. But, you know, he has his moments. He does his nice things. Basically, it's just a nice way of saying a character will do something nice to kind of show you that they're a good person, that you should root for them and enjoy watching this character. Right. So that poor woman falling face down onto the ground was the exact opposite of a save the cat moment. That was a snatch the cat, take her to the vet, put her down moment. Like, it was, I felt so bad for that lady who just took a absolute face plant at a party, face completely gone, has to be gone. And then people were just like, oh, whatever. Don't pick her up. Don't take her to a hospital. Don't call an ambulance. Just let her die. You know,
Hepburn's save the cat moment is that she's a materialistic woman obsessed with diamonds and riches. Basically, that's her. She doesn't have any redeeming qualities, but like, I feel like that's why people like her as a character.
Yeah. It's very unique.
Very unique. Yes. Yeah, so we'll call.
Yeah. So then the cops get called, right? So this party with all these people crammed in an apartment, you know, Mr. Yuniyoshi has been warning you. Well, he finally followed through and called the police. Okay. So cops show up, George Capard or Paul and the Brazilian. I think they kind of like skirt out through a window in the bathroom, which is a thing, I guess, when your building is multiple stories high, you can have those next to the shower, because literally in the shower. They pull the curtain back, two people are making out, and they kind of just like squirm around them to get out the window. And then one of my favorite parts is like, these two guys just escaped the police and escaped this wild party. And they just met. They kind of look at each other and like, well, have a nice night. And like, shake hands. And like, one goes up the stairs, the other goes down. They're like so happy. Like, they're just so giddy that they're not caught up in the whole mess that's about to happen.
Right.
The cops are now there, you know? And they're just like, well, off to bed. And then we got to Sing Sing, which she had referenced going to Sing Sing. And the only thing I know about Sing Sing is it sounds like some old school maximum security prison. So she goes to Sing Sing to meet Uncle Sally, who just seems to be like some old guy.
Sally Tomato, what a name.
Oh, that's Sally. Okay, so Sally Tomato. And then there's the weather report, which I kind of, at this point, I kind of thought, okay, there was something going on with the whole weather report. Well, we find out about that later, but he gives her the weather report. And it's something random, like New Orleans,
snow
high
in
chance
New Orleans,
of snow, yeah. You know, which actually this past year they did have really bad snow in
yeah,
New Orleans,
that's wild. I actually thought about that when I was watching it. Yeah.
And then we immediately go to the next scene where which a lot of movies and TV shows used to do this, which really annoys the hell out of me, which is they basically have like a musical act in the movie. And she is playing the guitar, you know, sitting on her balcony, on her fire escape.
The
singing.
Moon River moment, which,
yeah,
that's another iconic scene, I feel like, in an iconic moment from this film.
All right. Well, and what annoys me about scenes like that is they clearly shot or recorded that audio in like a sound studio.
Yeah.
That always annoys me because now, like, this woman's on a fire escape and she sounds like she's in a cushioned sound studio. Never really enjoy stuff like that. And then there's a mysterious man in the street. Okay. George Peppard's John, what do you call a female John? Like a Jane? Like his Jane is like there's some guy outside and he's actually kind of weird. So, Paul goes down there and kind of scopes the guy out. So he starts walking away. The guy follows him. As the guy's following him, I see his face. Does he look familiar to you at all?
Yeah, he did look familiar to me. I'm not sure
So
where from.
I see him and I immediately get it. I go, that is Jed Clampett from Beverly Hillbillies.
That makes so much sense. And
That
he's
is
casting the same role,
pretty much.
basically.
He's hillbilly, he's Jed Clampett. If Jed Clampett got like cleaned up and came to the big city, which eventually kind of does happen. So yeah, his name's Buddy Ebsen. I see his face. I'm like, is that Jed Clampett? Go on IMDb. Boom, Buddy Ebsen. So he's, spoiler alert, he's apparently the husband of Audrey Holly Golightly. His name is Doc Golightly, so I guess that's where she got the last name. Turns out her name's Lulu May.
Who saw that coming? You know what's really funny about or interesting about this movie, okay? And I kept thinking about this after I saw it. There's not a lot. Okay, I feel like 90% of films, they're going to tell this backstory and they're going to show a flashback. And because they didn't and it's all exposition, I have a really hard time buying this classy Audrey Hepburn lady had a rural upbringing, you know? It was really difficult for me to get over that hump.
Yeah, so in the party scene, there's this one guy that keeps popping up. I think Hollywood guy has something to do with movies.
Yeah, that guy's a really awesome actor, actually.
I like that character. I actually really like that guy. Probably one of my favorite people in the movie. That guy mentions to Paul, he's like, "Oh, when I first met Holly, she was a little toothless hillbilly from the foothills of Appalachia." And I was just like, okay, so she's got this weird, because now she almost seems like she's this, French socialite in a way. But you're telling us that she used to be some hillbilly, accent, and she worked on the accent for several years to kind of like change it. And then you find out she's little old Lulu May Golightly from God knows where. She meets up with Jed Clampett. They reunite. They go to a bus station. He's thinking he's going to take her home to the farm. She had other plans. Okay. So
She
Jed
waits to break up
Clampett.
with him right till the end. It's
Yeah,
tough.
dude. Really? She really like had her bag packed, like showing up to the train station. Like, oh, by the way, I ain't going, right?
Yeah.
So she breaks his heart. It's kind of sad. And I start wondering, like, she's definitely a psychopath at this point. I was like, this woman
But,
is a
okay, we're
psychopath.
missing a glaring detail. He married her when she was 14 years
Yes.
old.
Yes.
So, in a way, she was kind of brought into this illegal marriage and it was annulled. It was annulled. So legally they're not married anymore. And this Doc fella clearly has some ego problems or something because he still is under the impression they're still married. Or it's possible Holly Golightly, who we've already seen has zero moral compass, got the marriage annulled and then didn't even tell him that.
Yeah, very possible. At this point, nothing is out of the question. This woman will do anything, which I think is kind of the allure to somebody. You got to think of 1961, a female character like this that really stole the show, dominates the film, has a huge personality, has a mystery, and is not a great person. I feel like that could
Yeah.
appeal to people who probably have never
100%.
seen
She's
anything like
breaking
this.
all the conventions, all the moral conventions, all of the rigid, ways that women have to abide to. And I think, and I did think about that. I think that is one of the reasons that people really like her character
Yeah,
so
yeah,
much.
yeah. I think if she had been a nicer person, she probably wouldn't be nearly as popular. Yeah. So I think it all works. In the end, it all works. But and then after she lets Jed Clampett get on the bus and leave, and really what she should have been doing right here is when she cuts it off and he's on the bus about to leave, don't go after him. But she like goes after him and like touches his arm. And this poor guy, he's like a mental pretzel. He doesn't know what to do.
Dude, is this this is like literally the airplane spoof
Yeah.
scene, like redone. Like we've seen
Yeah.
this already in Airplane.
Yeah. And then she turns to Paul and is like, "It's too early for Tiffany's. Let's get a drink. Don't take me home till I'm drunk." It's gotta be like 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And then they go to a strip club. That was kind of out of like,
That was
what?
out of left field. That was
Yeah.
another one where I was like, wow, I can't believe this is 1961. And also, that was a really funny scene,
Yeah.
I
I
thought.
thought we were gonna see tits. I was 100%. When they like zoomed in on the one girl who like undoes her bra,
I
I'm like,
couldn't
oh my
believe it.
God,
I was
everybody
like,
can see
wow, they're really
tits.
going for it. Yeah. I honestly, so this, I was watching this at school during my lunch break, and that scene came on, and I was like, dude, this is 1961. What am I doing? Like, I really hope she doesn't take that off. But, like, thankfully, they didn't. There were no students in my room, but I was still like, oh my gosh, I was not expecting this.
And then There's a scene very soon where Paul knocks on her door. She opens the door, and she's got these earplugs in. And this is the second time that she's had earplugs in when she wakes up, and he's talking to her, and she can't hear him because she's
But
got
they're
earplugs.
also like the most stylish earplugs I've ever seen. They're earrings, basically.
Two things. Was earplugs like this a thing?
I
I
don't
know
know.
sleep masks were a thing. Like, my grandmother
Right.
wore a sleep mask. Were these gaudy, which looked like they looked like the kind of like a they looked like the little cord of an old lamp.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
No, yeah, like very much like a lampish. And she just had two of them like hanging out. And like, what kind of person starts a conversation with someone and just leaves earplugs in, and then after like 10 seconds, like pulls one out and is like, "What? Like, I've been talking to you the whole time."
So you were watching my mouth move. Why are you still, why is it still in?
Take it out, and then, you know, take it out. Then she takes one out and just leaves one dangling, like Ben Stiller and Something About Mary. And I was just like, "What's going on here?" So 1 hour and 9 minutes in, we finally enter Tiffany's. Okay. For a movie that's called Breakfast at Tiffany's, more than halfway through, we finally enter into Tiffany's.
I
didn't
like
seem
the
great.
jeweler.
Jeweler was my favorite.
He
Like that
dropped a he
guy.
dropped a little philosophy there in his 2 minutes of dialogue.
Yeah, he was very right. Like, to me, I could see him being a salesman at Tiffany's. I could see that. Like, very genuine, a little snooty, but still polite when he needed to be polite. Like, I thought he was a fun character. Then they go to the library. Poor thing, never been to a library. I guess they don't have those in Alabama. And then on their date, because this is a date, they go to Tiffany's and they go to the library, and then they go shoplift from like Dollar Tree, like the modern day Dollar Tree, which is just called like 5, 10,
The five and
25.
dime. It's a five and dime.
Five and dime.
They had a
Okay.
bunch of five. They had a five and dime on not every corner, but that's where you went to get all your necessities.
Okay. Well, they shoplifted from the five and dime. And then George is like, "All right, I'm in love with this lady. I have to break it off with my sugar mama," right? So he breaks it off with sugar mama. Goes better than I expected.
Yeah.
And then he
She's a
sees,
strong woman for
she
someone who
is.
depends on sex from
Yeah.
a hired man.
And speaking of that lady, I think she says "darling" about 400 times in her, whatever she's on the script. Between her and Audrey Hepburn, the word "darling" dominates this movie. Like,
It is
just pull the
very,
script
yeah.
up, do control F
I almost
"darling."
called my buddy Ryan up just to be like, dude, this is your movie.
Yeah, he would love it. Yeah, he's mentioned 400 times. So there's a falling out between Holly Golightly and Paul shortly after the breakup with the Jane, and she brings the man over, and then gets the telegram about Fred, her brother, who's been killed in some kind of an accident. And she goes absolutely apeshit. Fred's dead, and the house is destroyed. Who knew she even had that many things? She was throwing everything around.
Yeah.
Absolutely bonkers.
Well, one pillow stuffed full of feathers will really make a scene like that pop.
Yeah, really.
That's what I learned in that seconds.
Yeah. And then we kind of just fade to black. It comes back and it's months later with no notice. There's no title card saying like months later. It's just, here's a scene. She's happy again. She's moving to Brazil. She's learning Portuguese. She's about to marry the heir apparent to the Brazilian presidency or whatever.
Again, this scene again was like another clue into how this person, this character, is so savage and has no care or thought for other people's feelings. She knows this guy's in love with her, and the way she talks to him in this scene, first of all, she invites him, she wants to have this kind of like date with him or, be around him, but then all she wants to talk about is her future with this guy, and it's just like, man, what a selfish human. At this point, I literally wrote in my notes, this character has not had a single iota of redemption in her arc whatsoever. And there were 6 minutes left in the movie at this point. And I'm like, what's going to happen?
Yeah,
It's
she's
just one
tall.
more psychological breakdown. That's a spoiler, I guess. But that's all it takes to fall in love with someone is a couple of psychological breakdowns. And that's all it does. But she is just a morally, she's devoid of all morals.
Yeah, she's cold. She's cold-blooded. She only cares about herself, which that's probably very unique in
And
1961. Who has been like that?
only cares about like money up to the final minute of the scene after she abandons her cat.
Yeah, I actually had zero understanding of what money was like in this movie because he writes a story and it gets picked up for the paper and he gets $50, and then that's like a big deal. He's like, "Oh, I got a $50 check. Like, I'm taking you to the moon. Like, where do you want to go? South of Paris?" Like, I was like, "It's $50." And then she gets apparently $50 just to go to the powder room. And
Well, that's got to be like a sex thing, right? Like they can't say it. I actually had an argument about this with my wife because my wife loves this movie, and I was like, oh my God. I texted her immediately after watching it. I was like, I had no idea that this movie was so dark. Like, she's a call girl. He's an escort, a male escort. Like, they're getting together. And she's like, nah, I don't think that that's true. And then I looked up. This is based off a novella written by Truman Capote. And the character that he wrote is, he calls it an American geisha. And that brings a whole lot of light to everything that, you know, they're kind of hinting to, but don't quite say up front in the movie. And he was really, really angry and upset that Marilyn Monroe wasn't cast as the lead person, because he said that he thought that her actual life was much more of a mirror to this character than the prim and proper, highly educated, trained in ballet from a young age, musically talented Audrey Hepburn, who was coming off of the like British stardom, and like this was her Hollywood kind of like breakthrough in Hollywood, essentially.
She shot like a cannon because this was very popular. I can imagine this movie being absolutely huge in 1961. Yeah. So now her and Paul go out on this fun day. They have a great time. They, you know, they're laughing, yada, yada, yada. They come home. Cops are in her apartment. Thank you, Mr. Yunioshi. So the cuffs get slapped on her. She gets taken downtown, and suddenly there are reporters everywhere. It's just chaos. There's got to be some guy there named Scoop. You just know someone named Scoop.
100%. Missed opportunity. Someone should have yelled that out to somebody easily.
Yeah. Half of them should have had like the little press thing in their hat. Like, it's just total what you would expect. You know, the big camera with the big bulb on it. I actually have one right over there.
Really?
Yeah. So now she's in the headlines. She's, you know, the socialite getting smeared in the New York Times. And the Brazilian has dumped her. Sorry, the wedding's off. Do not come into Brazil. So you thought. At this point, you know she's a total con artist. Absolute con artist. There is no doubt this woman is 100% of a con artist. This is where this part really upsets me. You know, Paul, they're in a taxi, and Paul has the cat and like some of her belongings. And then she just opens the taxi door and just throws the cat out. And it's like, all right, good luck.
Yeah.
Just like, adios. And I'm thinking, this cat has been your friend. Like, you've been, you know, it's like, it's played a somewhat, maybe not a huge role plot-wise, but the cat's been around in every scene. Any scene in her apartment, the cat's there. Cat's a thing. Like, it's like a popular character, and you just toss it away in the gutter. Yeah, cool cat. And basically, Paul tells her to fuck off. He's like, all right, I've had enough. He's like, you're a psycho. I love you. You don't care. You're still going to go to Brazil. Like, I'm done. I'm throwing the towel in. So he gives the cab guy, God knows how much, probably $1,000. Like, the concept of money in this movie is so bananas. And he leaves. And in typical fashion, he's just playing hard to get, you know. That's what she needs. She needs somebody to be mean to her. She's a very modern woman. Like, she's a very modern woman. Like, she really reacts to people not wanting her. You know, if you want her, she doesn't want you. But if you don't want her, ooh, here she comes. And so he leaves, starts walking down the street. She finally comes to a realization that she's a human being and, I guess, accepts the love. And then she crawls out of the taxi. And it is just pissing rain at this point.
Of course. Like, I mean, this is iconic Hollywood, right? Yeah. You've got to make up in the rain.
Yeah, and the outfits they're wearing are, like, they're not good rain gear. Like this is absorbent clothes. These two people are just saturated. They're just drenched. And then she gets out to try to find the cat. And, of course, she finds the cat, you know. And now it's the end of the movie. You know, the guy got the girl, and the cat's there. And they're one big family now. God knows, like, they should do Breakfast at Tiffany's 2, and she just dumps him immediately and just moves on. Like,
dude, this relationship's not lasting at all. She has so much baggage. And also, you know, the cat is like a literal representation of her baggage. She refuses to name the cat anything.
Yes.
And she drops him off on the side of the curb after years of like a relationship. But she's like so afraid to have relationships with anyone because she knows that she just can't do it. And then Fred, her brother dying, which, by the way, this guy that she's supposedly in love with, Paul, I'm pretty sure she doesn't say his name correctly the entire film. It's always Fred. She calls him Fred the whole time. She's like, oh, you look just like my brother Fred. I'll just call you Fred to everyone from here on out. It's like, this is like all signs of a very damaging relationship.
Yeah. Never got off to a good start. And Paul, the character Paul, is pathetic in this movie. Like, he's just a pathetic man. Like, he had 1,000 reasons to just tell this lady, pound sand, I'm gonna go. You know, I got this gigolo thing going. I can get laid whenever I want. Like, I'm a
He's
gigolo.
also like he's also like he's no better than her. I mean, they're very much the same character, or as far as like moral flaws. But I actually think he's worse because she's an uneducated hillbilly who's like trying to make her way in the world, and he seems to have this education. He seems to understand right from wrong, and at least in the end, he kind of like reverts. But what's really annoying to me is he has that scene where he's like, "I can help her. She needs help. She can't help herself. I can help her." Which, you know, I'm not gonna like get all caught up on that, but it just was like, dude, you can't help yourself. You literally, every single move that you've made so far in your life has been a disaster. Which I guess that can bring us to the historical context of this movie. And like, obviously, it was made in 1961. We're what is it, 60 years later, and this movie, I would say, is still relevant to an extent. Like, if you Google it, you'll see a lot of articles written on it as early, like there's a lot of stuff around 2018. So I'm wondering if like either someone died in 2018 or if there was a special edition DVD or something released in 2018. I'm not sure. But my question to you is, do you think this will last in the next 50 years? Is this still going to be a relevant film?
Yes, I do. I think this holds up. I think there's plenty of reasons why. The color's great. Movie looks good. It looks cool. It's like a
It's
good
great.
looking
It
movie.
is a good looking movie.
It's kind of like Karate Kid in that it's a time capsule of the moment, which I think is
It's
great.
also so much more of an aesthetically appealing era. And maybe it's because we're dealing with adults and not teenagers. But I was constantly enamored with, and whoever the costume designer was, they just crushed it.
Fantastic. Yeah, it was great set designs. I thought the costumes were great. You know, you're not watching gritty 1961 New York. You're watching, high class socialite New York. It's got a lot that can really appeal to people. Plus, it's an iconic character. I get it. It's, unique. I would have loved to have seen it in 1961. That would have been fun. Because like you've never seen a character like that. And so, but it also could have very easily not held up. But I think it does. I really do. I think it does.
I think it does in a lot of areas. I think in watchability, it holds up to the nth degree. It is very engaging in a lot of ways. The visual storytelling is gorgeous. And I actually think this is a problem with modern film. In the digital camera age, I feel like a lot of directors have relied so heavily on like 4K or HD. This has been a problem since like the early 2000s, HD cameras, where they've gotten away from telling stories with like colors. And in the 60s, all the way up through the 90s, and I've not started thinking about this until we've rewatched a lot of these movies, but there's so many like saturated colors, and like the color disposition on these scenes is so appealing. And then you go and watch something like Avengers or like a modern blockbuster movie, and all the colors are like muddy and kind of brownish. And obviously, characters are wearing different costumes and stuff that have different colors, but there's almost like this grayish brown aesthetic to like almost everything. And I feel like color is kind of like out, but it really needs to come back because some of these movies that we're watching, I'm just like, man, it is really apparent how much thought and detail. It's almost like there was a color coordinator for every shot, or maybe that was on the director's mind or the cinematographer's mind. But yeah, this movie's dripping with style. I do think that there's a couple hurdles to get over. There are some obviously racist moments in this movie.
What? Who? What are you talking about?
I think this movie will, in the future, be thought of a little differently than it is now. Maybe, hopefully, I don't know. But I feel like this is thought of as a romantic comedy, but it's really kind of like a dark romantic comedy. Like there, it's much darker than I anticipated, and maybe that is the appeal, and I'm just aloof to it. But yeah, this was captivating to me because it just caught me off guard, you know? Is there anything that did not work for you in this movie? While you're
No.
thinking, I'll tell you one thing that didn't work for me, and that is, as much as Audrey Hepburn is the star of the show, and I wouldn't change her performance for anything, I think that maybe they should have reworked the plot of the novel for the Lulu May background, because I have a really hard time buying that she was a overweight hillbilly in her when she was 14.
Yeah, and that's another thing is she was apparently fat. Like
Yeah.
they made a lot of references. Like Jeb Clampett or Jed was very much like, "Oh, look how thin you are. Better make sure this girl eats, Paul." And I was like, I mean,
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah, strange.
Yeah, so we've got to play a fat 14-year-old. He loves fat 14-year-olds. This guy, Doc Golightly. Oh my lord, this guy. But yeah, I think most things held up. Obviously, Mr. Yudioshi is not going to hold up, but I
Yeah.
think it was fun to see this because I'd always heard about this Mickey Rooney character. I couldn't tell you what movie this guy was, this character in until I watched this one, and
I
it's just.
know I've seen Mickey Rooney, like old Mickey Rooney, in a lot of stuff. I couldn't tell you what he's in, but like I looked this IMDb up and then I saw like his the picture of him as an old man. He's like that really like just happy, bald, round old guy you see in a lot of different movies. I just never would have guessed that was him. Honestly, the first I watched it without looking at IMDb and I was like, "Man, who did they pay to do this?" It was a white guy. So Audrey Hepburn obviously steals the show. Is there anyone different for you, like as far as people who would steal the show? I just think Audrey Hepburn is like lights out in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I like my other two favorite characters were the Hollywood guy that keeps calling Paul Fred. That guy, I liked him a
Who's
lot. And
okay, he has an incredible, he's great. I just watched 12 Angry Men with my psychology class. So he's one of the guys in 12 Angry Men, and he's a great character there. He's also the detective in Psycho. So he's got a great little filmography there. But he's never the main character, just always like a peripheral character, but he's always pretty great.
Yeah, and I liked him, and I liked the salesman at Tiffany's. This movie could use more Tiffany's, to be honest with you.
True.
Could use a little more Tiffany.
Probably about 2 minutes of screen time for Tiffany's, I'd say.
Yeah, most of
But
it's right up front. I mean, the
yeah.
opening scene, which drags on because hell, you have to drag it on when you're also playing the credits.
There's a lot of dialogue about Tiffany's though, and it is kind of like her, it's like her safe place, right? And she mentions multiple times, like when I'm in that red, what does she call it? Like her red space or whatever. And when she's like afraid and she doesn't know why she's afraid, she thinks about Tiffany's or she goes to Tiffany's and she talks about that. So it's kind of like her, even though, you know, that to me is like one of the weaknesses of the film, that like overall, I would say the moral message of this movie is that like it's very like pro-capitalism, you know, and which is fine. It
Love it.
just, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's a little shallow, I think, when you dig into the morality of it. But at the same time, it's very fun, entertaining. What would you give this overall out of 5 stars?
I'm giving it 3.5. 3.5 out of 5. Good enough to keep my attention the whole movie. I will say this though, and not to this movie's, not their fault. I just had a lot going on, and it actually took me so long to finish it that I had to pay twice for a rental.
Oh man,
I
that
had to
sucks.
rent this movie twice, but thankfully, I had enough points on my Amazon account to get them for free both times.
Gotta get
But
that Paramount
yeah.
Plus, man.
Yeah, apparently I could have bought 4 months of Paramount Plus for what I paid to rent this movie. Also, could have bought the movie digitally for $5.
Oh, dang.
And I paid $8 to rent it twice.
Well, I bought it on DVD for $2.95, and then I actually watched it on Paramount Plus because I needed to watch it at school because we were getting down to the wire. I would actually, I had written down 3.5 stars as well. So we, for the first time, I think we're going to land on the exact same score. I think this is a good movie. I think it's got a lot of problems, but overall, it's really fun. And I mean, I'm just going to be 100% honest. Of all of the Hollywood leading women, I would put Audrey Hepburn in like the top 10. I love My Fair Lady, which is like where she's kind of like this redneck is not the right word. She's a British, like rural, no class woman. And it's a musical, but she comes like up into like the society essentially.
Okay.
That's really great. But this, for whatever reason, even though I don't necessarily agree with her morals, she's just so charming. It's undeniable.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, great character, great performance. She did a fantastic job.
Yeah,
Not
agreed.
necessarily likable at all times, but that's just part of what she was
That's,
going for, and she
I
nailed
think
it.
that's a fun part of her character as well, as far as like acting. She really went all in on it. But that is all the time we have here today. You can write into us at blastofthepastcast@gmail.com and tell us what you think about Breakfast at Tiffany's and also what you think we should look at on a future episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.